right. Of course, the Medrash tells us one of the things that Kaiso, and one of the schusim for which Kaiso was redeemed from Mitzrayim was the Shaloshinuas, the Shainam, that they didn't change the language, of course, of Lashon HaKodesh, but even though the language has not changed, over time, pronunciations have changed, and the way that the Lashon HaKodesh has been pronounced, and certainly there are differences within the communities that we are familiar with, and I wanted to discuss today the differences between these communities. Is there such a thing as one pronunciation that's more correct than the other? So first, the rule is, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Brachos, Daf Tezvav, and Aleph, Karav Ugoi Dikdik Boisi Yosef, a person reads Kriya Shema. He's not careful in the way that he pronounces the words. Rabbi Yosi Omer Yotza. Rabbi Yosi's opinion is he has fulfilled Kriya Shema. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lo Yotza. He has not, in fact, fulfilled Kriya Shema if you don't pronounce the words carefully. The Gemara tells us on Tezvav Mabez, Omer Rav Tavi, Omer Rav Yosi, Halach, Kedivay Shneim Lahaka, we paskin like Rabbi Yosi that a person has fulfilled Kriya Shema even though he didn't pronounce the words carefully. Now, this doesn't mean that he doesn't pronounce half a word or that he misses a whole word entirely. That's not called Kara. Kara means you read it, but you didn't read it, precisely, accurately, or perhaps, somewhat correctly, but you did enunciate each word. Otherwise, that wouldn't even be the beginnings of Kara. The Gemara explains a little bit further what's included in this. Kara v'o diktek b'si yoseh. The Gemara says, based on the pasuk, l'matatam she'a limud chatam, that it should be complete, your learning should be complete, meaning the words should be pronounced completely. You shouldn't blend or merge or blur or slur two words together. She'itain revach bein advokin, in order to separate between the words. So the Gemara says, for example, in Kriya Shema, you shouldn't say, when you have the last consonant and the first consonant of adjacent words are the same, you might come to blend the two together. So you should say, al levavecha, or al levavchem, b'chol levavecha, to make sure that you separate between the words, vavadatem, mehera. That's the proper way to learn Kriya Shema. The Taisus there adds another example of v'chara af. You make sure that that's two words, not v'charaf, which it could become blended into become one word. Or, in generally, in being careful in the way that we speak in the words of Kriya Shema, Taisus says another example of this is tiz keru. You should make sure to pronounce it with a zayin as opposed to with a shin, where it should be tiskeru, which would imply that a person is serving Kadosh Baruch Hu for the reward that's present. But of course, we know that we are mishamish as a Kadosh Baruch Hu shaloi v'nasa kabo pras. We do so not having a mind to receive reward, and therefore the word tiskeru means to be remembered. Yeah.
Why is the market example of Esav Besadcha?
We'll get to. Very good, very good. Sharp, excellent. So the Rambam includes within this halacha over here, Perek Beis, halacha Ches and Hilchos Kriya Shema. He expands it somewhat. The Rambam says, what did the basic Mishnah mean before we got to the Gemara, which comes to the pasuk Umadatam Shehei Lemut Chatam, that you should be enunciate each word? What did the Mishnah initially mean when it said Karvelo Diktek Beos Yaseh? Was that only to separate between the words, or perhaps there's something even more that was implied by the Mishnah? So the Rambam explains that what was implied initially by the Mishnah was you have to make sure that Shelo Yerapa Hachazak Lo Yachzik Karopa. You shouldn't put a dugesh where it doesn't belong, and turn a vase into a baze or a fe into a pay where it's in, where it's not called for. Ovelo Yaniach Hanad Bo Yanid Es Hanach. You shouldn't put emphasis on the wrong syllable in each word. That should also be pronounced correctly. So to make sure to pronounce each letter correctly, to put the emphasis where it belongs, and to separate between the words, all of these are included in this Tzarech L'Dakdik B'Yosi Yosef. The Rambam continues at the end. They really include something that seems extraneous to the discussion. The Rambam says, Tzarech L'Harich B'Dawid Shal Echad K'dei Shem Lichu B'Shamayim V'Aretz V'Avar Ruchais. Why do you have to have pause or accentuate, exaggerate the Dalet at the end of Echad? It's because you have to have in mind not only the meaning of the word Echad, which means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is one, but also that Kadosh Baruch Hu rules over the heavens and the earth, and the Arba Kanfos Haaretz, which the Dalet, of course, is Gematria 4. So that's something you have to have in mind. That takes an extra second, so therefore you have to exaggerate the letter Dalet at the end of Echad. That has nothing to do with Tzarech L'Dakdik B'Yosi Yosef. What is that doing here in this context? So the Brisker Rav says, just infers from the Rambam, that even though this is really because of a different agenda item, because of the extra level of kavanah, the extra layer of kavanah that's needed in the word echad. But since that's the proper way to pronounce it, now it became by default quite a different status. And now this is part of rereading Kriya Shema correctly. So if you didn't do this, even though that's not what you're having in mind, you're spacing out. But that's part of learning Kriya Shema correctly, is to have that extra kavanah, that extra emphasis on the letter Dalet at the end of the word Echad. So that's also now part of the Tzarech L'daktik Ba'os Yosef. So now, yes, you're supposed to learn Kriyashma this way, properly, with proper emphasis, proper pronunciation of each letter and each syllable, and of course to separate between the words. Let's say you didn't do it. You didn't do it. So you're Yaitse B'di'evet. It's not L'chachila, but you are Yaitse B'di'evet. So what is the clear implication of this Gemara Masech Tzibrachos is that there is a proper way to read Kriyashma. There's a proper way to pronounce the Hebrew language. And if you did it improperly, you're Yaitse Kriyashma B'di'evet, but it's really not L'chachila. Tzarech L'daktik B'Yosef Yosef. L'chachila, you're supposed to pronounce Lashon HaKadosh properly. So because of that, it's not surprising when the Gemara says in Masech Tzibrachos, Chavdal Mubeis, that Chayfani Ubaishani, people from the cities of Haifa and Beishan, who didn't pronounce Hebrew correctly, they weren't Mechalek, the Gemara says. They should call in the Alfin Einin or Einin Alfin. They don't distinguish between the letter Ein and the letter Aleph. So you're not allowed to ask them to either be Noiseis Kapav, to do Nesiyas Kapayim, it'll be distracting, or it'll be, lead to people to make fun of them. You're not allowed to appoint them to be about Tfilah. He's not supposed to be Yoyal Lefnei HaTeva because he doesn't pronounce Lashon HaKodesh properly. And that's not surprising because even though B'di'evet you're Yoytze, he shouldn't L'chatkil be serving as a Shliach Tzibor. The Gemara goes on and says Reb Chiya also couldn't serve as a Shliach Tzibor because Reb Chiya couldn't distinguish between Hey and Ches. So instead of saying V'chikisi L'Hashem, he said V'chikisi as Hashem. Or V'chikisi as Hashem, which means I struck HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Mecharif and Megadev, the Gemara says. It's as if you're cursing Hashem. So therefore, he shouldn't serve as a Sliach Tzibor either, because he's made not Mechav between the Hey and the Ches, or the Aleph and the Ayin. You're not supposed to serve as a Sliach Tzibor. So okay, so it sounds like there's a proper way to do it. If you don't do it properly, you're Yoytze to be the Eved, but you're not Chachil or not, and therefore you shouldn't serve as a Sliach Tzibor. Yeah?
Could
you lean? No, also not. No, definitely not. Another thing that you see from this Gemara Masechtas Megillah, before we get to discussing the modern applications of this, is the Zayah HaKadosh, you see from the Gemara Masechtas Megillah that there's a difference between the letter Aleph and Ayin, right? Each one of the 22 letters of the Aleph base, and this isn't surprising, are supposed to be pronounced differently. It doesn't make sense to have redundant letters in the Aleph base. They probably each have their own distinct sound. So Aleph and Ayin has a different sound, just like Ches and Hey has a different sound. And in fact, the Zayah HaKadosh tells us each one of the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis has a different sound, and each one is produced from one of five places in the mouth, either through the lips, through the teeth, through the tongue, through the palate, or through the throat. And the Zayah HaKadosh tells us which one of the letters is supposed to be pronounced from which part of the mouth. Some suggest that's why we have Chamisha Chumshei Torah. There's five books to the Torah. Why? Because the Pasuk says, say, from Mishlei, what rehabilitates the body after speaking, or rehabilitates the mouth after speaking Lashon Hara, Mar Peloshon Eitz Chaim. What rehabilitates the mouth is learning Torah, because now you're taking your speech, which you use negatively and harmfully, destructively and critically of others, and using it positively to learn the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that rehabilitates your mouth. But you have five different parts of your mouth that need to be rehabilitated. You have the lips, the teeth, the tongue, the palate, and the throat. So we need Chamisha Chumshei Torah in order to rehabilitate our entire speech. Perhaps that's why also Bujav Rebbe suggested in Sefer Tzvi Tzadik, we have Chamisha, we have five Lashonos of Geula. It's in the parasha now. Five Lashonos of Geula, Vaitesi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilokachti, Vehevesi. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought us Sefer Tzvi, the fifth Lashon of Geula. Why do we need five Lashonos of Geula? So Bujav Rebbe says, because how do we end up in Mitzrayim in the first place? We say in the Agada, Onos al Pi Hadibor, we were trapped by the speech. Whose speech? So we would typically interpret that it refers to Kadosh Baruch Hu's speech to Avram Avinu at the time of the Brisbane Absarm of Kigeri Azarech, by Erzal Elohim. Kadosh Baruch Hu told me you're going to be strangers in a foreign land. However, the Rav Shlomo Kluger claims that it's based on a Balaturim early in Parshas Vayera, where when Yitzchak is born, Sarah evicts Hagar, who was from Mitzrayim, from her house in a harsh fashion. So says Rav Shlomo Kluger, in the language that Sarah used in evicting Hagar from her house, that's the Dibor we refer to in the Haggadah. We were trapped by the Dibor. It means the speech of Sarah, because Baal Turim says, why did we end up in Mitzrayim? We could have been exiled to any land. Kadosh Baruch Hu just said, he didn't identify a country. Why was it Mitzrayim? It was Mida Keneged Mida, because we, Sarah, evicted Hagar from the house harshly, in a callous fashion, so we had to then become slaves in Mitzrayim, which was Hagar's home turf. in order to make up for that. So we ended up there, trapped by the speech of Sarah in the careless and harsh fashion in which she evicted Sarah from her house. That's how we ended up in Mitzrayim. Or, but even more directly, right, we ended up there because Mechiras Yosef, which was, well, Yachlu Dabra L'Shalom, they weren't able to speak peacefully. Vayaveh Yosef is Diba Samar El Avihem, he spoke Lashon Hara about his brother. So we ended up in Mitzrayim because of Lashon Hara or the harsh speech of Sarah. In order to rehabilitate that, to get out of Mitzrayim, therefore we needed perhaps five Lashonos of Geula, but it says if he sells to be good, I'll to be good, coffee, very basic. We need five Lashonos of Geula. Okay, fine. So, but you see from the Zohar HaKadosh that each letter, and from the Gemara Masechtas Megillah, each letter is really supposed to have a different sound that it produces. So this leads Rabbi Yaakov Emden already in his Siddur in the Beis Yaakov, as well as many others subsequently. The Torah Tamima has this in his biography, the Makar Baruch. And Rabbi Henkin, Rabbi Vadya, many, many others say that that claim that therefore Havara Svardit seems to be more accurate because you find distinction, even to certain elements of Havara Temanit, which distinguish between the Tes and the Taf, or certainly between the Ayin and the Aleph. So they claim that or between we don't have a distinction between the Saf and the Samach. In Ashkenazi pronunciation, so these seem to be benefits of Havara Sfardit, which perhaps are indicators that in fact it was more correct. That was the opinion of Yaakov Kamenetsky as well. He wrote here a haskama to a contemporary sefer called Safa Berura, which was an investigation of the different Havaras, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky gives him a grace of shkaya for investigating the issue. He believes Havara Sfardit to be more accurate, more correct. They say that Rabbi Yaakov used to repeat Kriya Shema. He used to say it the first time in his native Havara, and then afterwards he would say Havara Sfardit, and in later years maybe even Havara Teimanit. But he says over there that he thinks Havara Sfardit is more correct. So he says, someone asked me, so what does that mean? The Chiddush HaRim was never Yotze Kriya Shema? No, he was Yotze B'diavad. Karfu Adikdik Yotze Yaseha, Yotze B'diavad, but it's not Chachila. So he says, yeah, okay, so he was Yotze, but he was Yotze B'diavad. And the truth is of the base Ritvaz, he says it's not surprising that Havara of the Ashkenazim became more corrupted, perhaps, than Havara of the Sfardim, because the Chuvas of the base Ridvaz, not to be confused with the Rishon, the Radvaz, at the end of the period of the Rishonim, this is the Ridvaz. Ridvaz was in the last 150 years in Tzfas, Wilensky. So he wrote a commentary on the Yerushalmi, which he's famous for. So in the base Ridvaz, he says, it's not surprising, because the Ashkenazi communities were evicted from one country to the next. What corrupts the Havara is perhaps because of the influence of the secular language that they're speaking, that starts to drip into Lashon HaKodesh, because there are certain sounds we're just used to producing by the vernacular that you speak, and there might be other influences on language also. So because we kept moving from place to place, therefore, it was more open to corruption as opposed to the Sfarshi communities, which, of course, experienced their share of persecutions, but not in terms of moving. They weren't as transient as the Ashkenazi communities, and therefore, perhaps, it was more preserved. Rabbi Vadya, therefore, is a truth in the Abiyah. Remember, this is not surprising in terms of Rabbi Vadya's general position on these kinds of matters, that if an Ashkenazi kid is given an education in a Jewish day school and he's being taught Lashon HaKodesh by some Israeli teacher who, for some reason, has to indoctrinate the students with Havara Eretz Yisrael, which is not really Havara Sfardi. So it's similar, but not exactly the same. And, because how are they going to order pizza in Eretz Yisrael if they don't know how to speak properly? So they take the Havara, even during davening, that the kids grew up with, and they get to teach them a different Havara. So Rabbi Vadya says, you don't have to switch back to the Havara that you grew up with of the Ashkenazim, because either way, the teacher did you a favor, because now they taught you the proper Havara. There are those that bring a raya from the Gemara to the Havara of the Sfardim, not only because it differentiates between letters, where in the Ashkenazim sometimes they get blended together, but because look back at the Gemara Masechtas Brachos, which told us you have to distinguish, articulate each word independently. So one of the words that you have to distinguish between them is Bechol Livavecha, right? That ends with the same consonant as the next word begins. But then what about Esev, as Zach's point, Esev Besodcha? So for Ashkenazim, it doesn't end and begin with the same consonant, because we would pronounce Esev different than Besodcha. But there are certain dialects of Havara Sfardid which would pronounce them all the same. They don't distinguish between a vase and a vase. So now, then it makes more sense. So don't you see a riot from here to the Havara of the Sfardim against the Havara of the Ashkenazim? So the truth of the matter is, it's not a great riot, because just look two examples later where the Gemara says we also have to distinguish between Hakanaf and Pesil. Now there's no Havara. that pronounces the soft pay the same as the hard pay. No one says hakanap patil. So obviously the Gemara here is dealing with words that even though they end in the same end and begin in the same consonant, they might not necessarily be pronounced the same. And in fact, the Meiri, granted he's an Ashkenazi, but the Meiri already makes this point. He says v'afal pish b'milos esev b'sradcha v'chein hakanaf b'sio ena achas nikris k'mal acheres. They're not really the same. Back at the Oisala, Vein Mesuyu Avuyach Chaverot, it's not as common as you might, as Al Livavecha. Nonetheless, the two might become blended together between Wa'achas and one breath. So therefore, you have to make sure to distinguish between them, even though you're right, they're not exactly the same. The Makar Baruch, that's sort of Torah Tamim in his biography, the Makar Baruch, so he, also goes on a rant about this, that how the Havar of the Sfardim is more correct, and he was really combating the Havar of the Litvish, which we don't really have anymore in our yeshiva, but the people who used to say, like the Rav, if you listen to tapes, used to say Teira. He used to pronounce the Cholim like a Tseire, Teira. So Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the Torah Tamim says, well, if you're going to pronounce the Pasuk like that, so then what about the Pasuk Havu Lashem Kaved V'eiz, right? It's really supposed to be Havu Hashem, Kavod V'eiz, glory and strength. If it's Kavod V'eiz, it's a kidney and a goat, right? So you gave Hashem, we praise Hashem, he has kidneys and goats. It's not the same kind of praise. It's Havu Hashem, Kavod V'eiz. Okay, so either way, there seems to be, but if you're going to do that, you can start with the Chassidim, and they don't distinguish between who and he, and then okay, why stop there? Okay, but either way, there seems to be, there seems to be one correct way, or let's call it like this. There seems to be a correct way to read Rosh Hashanah Kodesh, which you are supposed to use when you learn Kriya Shema. Presumably from that, we should extrapolate to all of Tefillah. It's most intense, most sensitive with regards to Kriya Shema, so Mitzvah Midoraisa. But presumably, it's advantageous to pronounce all of Tefillah. It's not like we should be slurring our words during other parts of Tefillah. We should extrapolate out from Kriya Shema to all parts of Tefillah, that we should really articulate the words properly. If you didn't, at least if you enunciated the words in some form or another, you are Yotze, but you're supposed to do it, and therefore to serve as a shliach tzibur, you really have to pronounce the words properly. And there are those who have argued that since each one of the words of the aleph bays presumably is supposed to have a different sound, presumably that perhaps the havarah of the sfardim is more advantageous. However, in the Tshuvas of the Har Tzvi, that's the Tzvi Pesach Frank, he argues that even though the sfardim might, their havarah might be more advantageous in terms of distinguishing between the different letters, they are worse off when it comes to the nekudos. He therefore claims Havara of the Ashkenazim here is more correct, because in the Havara of the Sfardim, there's really very little difference, if at all, between the Pasach and the Komatz. Whereas in Ashkenazim, the Komatz is A, Pasach is A. And that's a big deal, because Rabbeinu Bachya writes in his comments to Parashat Vayera that where the word, the Shem Adnos of the Ribbono Shel Olam is pronounced with a Komatz. The Shem Chulin of Adonai, which means my master, which is, it doesn't have any reference to the Ribbono Shel Olam at all. So then that's with a Pasach. So if you're going to pronounce the Komatz and the Pasach the same, they're both a Pasach, so then the Rabbeinu Bachya says, what you're really doing is diminishing the honor or the respect that's due to the Ribbono Shel Olam, because he claims there's a big difference in connotation between our Pisoid, between the Komatz and the Pasach. The Pasach, I'm not that big of a bucky in Diktuk to understand the nuance, but he says every time you find the word, the vowel, Pasach, it's always in a word that is dependent on the following word. You'll never find at the end of a phrase a Pasach. Whereas a Komatz is a much more independent, stronger vowel, and therefore, you can even find it in a snacht or at a soif pasach. So a pasach implies dependency on someone else. So Adonai with a pasach is a shame chulin, because every Adon, every master, really dependent on the Ribbono Shel Olam for his authority, ultimately. So therefore, it's with a pasach. That's what the shame chulin, the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the shame adnos of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, is supposed to be with a kamatz, because that implies a Kodesh Baruch Hu is independent and doesn't need the authority of the help of anybody else. So to pronounce it all with a pasach, like the nusach of the havar of the sfardim, that diminishes the cover that's due to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the Rebbeinu Bachya makes a big deal about it. He claims that it could bring one to be not only lose your kavana, but it could be bring a person to kfirah. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank makes a big deal about this, that at least when it comes to the vowels, the Ashkenazim are here have the upper hand, and the Maral, 1500s already in Prague, obviously Ashkenazi, so he makes the point also in the Tiferes Yisrael that he thinks that Havar of the Ashkenazim is way superior to the Havar of the Sephardim, because when it comes to many of the vowels, he said, you know, he claims we have the upper hand, we pronounce them more carefully. So, okay, so each one, you know, there's perhaps benefits and, you know, there's ups and downs, benefits and drawbacks to each one of the different Havaras. So what should be our approach? What should, you know, what should one do? So we already saw Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky used to lay in Kriya Shema and many different Havaras. They say that Rav Nosson Alder, who is the Rebbe of the Chassam Sefer, it's printed in his biography, he hired a Sfardish tutor to teach him Havar. He believes the Havara Sfardit to be more correct, so he hired a Sfardish tutor to teach him how to speak Havara Sfardit. For 2 years, he needed a tutor. You would say, what's so hard? For 2 years, he needed a tutor? I don't know, but... I guess it could take a long time. You hear sometimes people who are learning to speak Hebrew, by way of they never get it, right? So obviously it takes a long time to learn how to speak properly. So okay, even Rav Nosson Alder needed a tutor for 2 years to understand the subtleties of how to speak Havara Sfardi. So you see there were some who adopted, you know, the Havara that they believed to be more correct. So what should we do? Maybe if the vowels are more correct with the Havar of the Ashkenazim, the consonants are more correct with the Havar of the Sephardim, maybe we should just take the best, you know, both worlds and come up with our own concoction of a Havar. What should be our approach? Yeah.
How was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky able to do both the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi one? Wouldn't them, by definition, one be the wrong one?
Okay, but he was Yaitse, that's why he wanted to be Yaitse both. So his native one he did during davening, and the other ones, you know, like you find people who take different, you know, five Esregim. They want to be Yaitse, make sure the Yaitse, at some point, at least he's Yaitse Krishma, right? So, according to one.
But isn't it
possible,
like you saying, like, just like saying Hashem didn't be in the other way?
It's Torah. What are you talking about? It's Pesukim in the Chumash. Shema. There's no brachas. He didn't daven again.
Right.
So, no problem. You can say Krishma anytime you want. Yeah, so what should be our approach? So the classical Paiskim, Dayan Weiss and the Minchas Yitzchak, who of course is the Rav of the Eidah Charedis, the Chazon Ish, of Shlomo Zalman, Rav Kook, in this Tshuvas Orech Mishpat, which really was a Tshuva to Rav Ben Zion Uziel, the first Sephardic chief rabbi of the State of Israel, all argue one should not change from his original Havara. He should stick with his native Havara, despite the arguments back and forth, which one is superior, he should stick with his native Havara, and they base themselves, in fact, Shlomo Zalman over here in Halicha Shlomo, I thought it's such an interesting comment, laments the fact that in Eretz Yisrael, the Havara of the Sephardim became popular, even amongst people who, of course, were from Ashkenazi descent. The majority of the original settlement of Jews were from Ashkenazi descent, and nonetheless, they adopted, now of course, there were, you know, secular overtones and maskilisha overtones to all this, because the academics believed Havara of the Sephardim to be more correct, so therefore they promoted it actively. But Shlomo Zalman claims that this was not done with any kind of Das Torah. So he says, "Masha Hunug, if they command Shana Berach Ashkenazim, Yikabul as Havara Sephardim, that which happened about 100 years ago in Eretz Yisrael, that they adopted the Havara of the Sephardim, and believe it's Yais B'Das Torah. This didn't happen with consultation with Paiskim, and, you know, some sort of consensus decision. V'achein misukani, d'itokin shigam anche kiloso, everyone has to, who comes from that kind of background, to really revert, change back to the Havara of the Ashkenazim, but he admits that this cannot be discussed publicly. You know, you can't talk about this. We can't even mention this publicly. Okay, but his position is clear, that you're supposed to stick with the Havara that a person grew up with, and that's a common theme amongst many Paiskim. But there's this base in the comment of the Magen Avraham. At the beginning of Simon Samaches, he has kind of a hakdama where he quotes there from the Ari HaKodesh with regards to Nusach of Tefillah, which admittedly is quite different, but you know, with regards to Nusach of Tefillah, that there are Yud Beis, there were 12 gates leading into the Beis HaMikdash, corresponding to the 12 Shvatim, because each Shevet has a designated gate, and because of that, there really is an indication each one has a different way of connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why in the Shul, you're supposed to have 12 windows, like the 12 gates that used to enter into the, at least 12. And it corresponds to the 12 gates entered into the Beis HaMikdash, and each Shevet a unique way of connecting with Hashem, not only in terms of the Derech of Avodah, but also in terms of the Nusach HaTfilah, that each one had their own unique Nusach of Tfilah. However, the Ari HaKadosh says, each Shevet has a unique Nusach, which is Meyuchah for them, which is designated for them, it only works for them. You can't jump to another Shevet, just like you can't jump to another Shevet in terms of your you know, allotment, in terms of your portion, Eretz Yisrael, you can't jump to another Shevet in terms of their Nusach HaTfilah, it won't work for you. So you got to stick with your nusach, you can't change. That's the Magen Avraham says with regards to nusach of Tefillah, that you're not supposed to change from your original nusach that you grew up with. Rav Moshe, though, then calls out in the Igros Moshe, says, well, what's with Nusach Sfard? What's with all the Hasidim? Or what's with the Nusach of the Ari? The Ari has his own Nusach of Tefillah. The Ari is the one who says he's supposed to stick with the Nusach of Tefillah of your Shevet. But the Ari has his own Nusach, based on, you know, we integrated many in Yonim of Kabbalah, of Sod. And Nusach Sfard is a newer kind of Nusach, which is loosely based on the Nusach of the Ari. So Rav Moshe, in the Igros Moshe, calls out the Chassidim. He says, look, guys, he says, you're all Ashkenazim, whether you're from Poland, from Galicia, from Russia. They were all Ashkenazi descent. So how do you all of a sudden come to switch to Davin Nusach Sfar? But the Chassidim, who claim to follow the Ari HaKadosh, typically, over here, are switching from the Nusach. So they, the Chassidim have a Yishuv, they quote in the name of the Mezritch of Magid, the name of Rav Tolia of Ravshitz also, that actually, the Mishnah says in Meshech Lishkalim, there were 13 gates entering into the Beis HaMikdash. And the Ari HaKadosh created his own Nusach. That wasn't a change from the Nusach. He believed that the 13th gate was a Shar HaKoyo, like a safety net. Because what will happen? A person forgets what Shevet he's from. Many today don't have no idea what Shevet that they're from. So, obviously, if you're from Shevet Levi, you know about it. But otherwise, you know, who knows? So therefore, you need, I don't know what gate to go into. So the Ari HaKadosh said the 13th gate was the Shar HaKoyo, was the gate that everyone, you know, the misplaced persons could enter into that gate. And the Nusach of the Ari was meant to be a common denominator for the misplaced persons where they don't know where, you know, how else to enter. The 13th gate was the Nusach of the Ari. So he didn't feel that this was a change. This was something that was Shavu L'chol Nefesh. Yeah.
I'm confused. I thought the Jews knew which Shevet they were in by the time they already entered Eretz Israel, which is why...
They did nowadays. What about now?
No, nowadays they don't. I'm saying, how could there be a 13th gate with a 13th
gate? Ah, so you're right. So there's a somewhat of a discrepancy. With their 12, with their 13, sometimes there were 13 only for misplaced persons. Lost a level, they'll go back to being 12. That's on Yane's side. But the Mishnah says there were 13. So that, whether that's going to be the permanent structure or they'll go back to 12 when everyone knows where they're coming from is a discussion. But it's fantastic horror. But for now, the Mishnah says there's 13 because maybe there'll be people who will get lost. Or maybe it's, you know, for the lost and found of Klal Yisrael. That there should be some way for them still to connect with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. So then that's why they switched to Nusach. But other than that, you know, other than the switching the Nusach of the Ari, we really shouldn't switch our Nusach of Tefillah, as we all know, right? We don't switch back and forth Nusach of Sfarad. If you're davening as Sfarad as Shashul, you should daven like their Nusach. If they're davening, we would hope the Sfaradim would do the same courtesy. If they're davening Ashkenazi Shul, they would switch to our Nusach. And they should preserve the Nusach of where a person is davening. And if he's going to daven there permanently, we could discuss maybe he should switch the, you know, switch his Nusach permanently. But that's only if you're going to join that community. Generally speaking, a person should speak with his Nusach of Abba Yosef. So too, many extrapolated from there here as well. But when it comes to Havara, we should stick with our Havara, particularly Rabbi Herzog makes the point with the fact that this was done deliberately by the secular influence of those who, you know, who came to Eretz Israel to push Havara Sfardit because they believed it to be more correct, and it wasn't with any kind of religious agenda. It was a secular agenda, so why should we necessarily capitulate to that? So, you know, all of those factors combined, many felt that we should stick with the Havara that a person grew up with. Yeah.
How do you differentiate between, like, whether or not you should say Tel or Sa?
That's the difference. Havara Sfardit, Havara Ashkenazim, Havara of the Ashkenazim. Havara of the Ashkenazim is Sa, Havara of the Sfardim is Tel. Yeah. However, the Mishpat Uziel, that was the first Sephardic chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. This was Rav Kook was responding to his first tshuva, and his tshuva is Simon Aleph, where he argues that you can't switch your Havara. And he based himself really on the tshuva of the Marshdam, who disagreed with the Magen Avraham in the name of the Ari. You could switch your Nusach HaTfilah too. There's no such thing as a minig when it comes to these issues. If we would ask people, what's a classic minig? You would say, the way you daven, your Nusach HaTfilah is a minig. So the Marshdam claims it's not a minig. A minig is something, and we're sympathetic to what he says, is a minig is something that has halachic significance to it, meaning it's halachically advantageous. For example, a person waits 72 minutes on Motzei Shabbos to be chayshish for the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. That Tzeisu Kachovim is not, you know, when you see three stars, it's way after. That's halachically advantageous. No one's going to disagree with you. You're going to be chayshish the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Or you have a minig, the Chabadskers, or many chassidim, have a minig, they're chayshish for Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, they put on both sets of tefillin. Very nice. So that's a minig. That's a minig. It's halachically advantageous. Or the Gemara Maseches Psochim, whole perek, Malkum Shenogu, there were those that believed there was an Issa Malacha on Erev Pesach, because it was a Yomtiv. So there were certain cities that were noig in Issa Malacha, there were certain cities that weren't noig in Issa Malacha, because that's based on a halachic issue. So, but when it comes to Nusach HaTfilah, The Mashdam argues this not, one is not halakhically advantageous more than the other. Then equal, valid sources. So the Mashdam claims that minig doesn't apply to this, and as long as it's coming, you're not composing your own nusach. As long as it's coming from a legitimate source, you can switch back and forth. That was the opinion of the Mashdam. So based on the Mashdam, Rabbi Ben-Zion Uziel argues, even though we don't really accept the Mashdam, right? Typically, we don't switch our Nusach of Tefillah. I don't know any community where that's acceptable. We don't switch our Nusach of Tefillah. But this is even less than that. Havara is not the same as Nusach of Tefillah. Presumably, there aren't gates, in the Beis HaMikdash for different Havaros also. That's for Nusachos of Tefillah, yes. But Havara, no. It's even less of an issue. So therefore, Rabbi Ben-Zion Uziel argues that you can switch Havara. Obviously, I wouldn't switch back and forth within one day to the next, but you can switch, loosely speaking, back and forth, and it wouldn't even be the same objection to switching the Nusach of Tefillah. But that Rav Kook was disagreed vehemently with that position. He argued that, no, we should preserve the Minag, just like the Nusach of Tefillah, you shouldn't switch your Havara. Ah, Merkaz Arav, they speak Havara Sephardi. So I was told that Tzvi Yehuda felt, Tzvi Yehuda Cook felt that it was too confusing. It was like schizophrenic. The kids outside, when they're ordering their pizza, speaking one Havara. Then all of a sudden they come to Davin and speak a different Havara. So it just gets so confusing in Eretz Yisrael sometimes to switch between Havaras. That's why in the yeshivish in Eretz Yisrael, the Israeli yeshivish, there's like a whole sprach, they have their own Havara. Like it's kind of like a combination. But either way, because of the confusing nature of speaking one way and davening and learning in a different Havara. So that's why some yeshivas have adopted Havara Sephardit. It's just too confusing, a practical matter. But ideally, a person should really preserve the Havara that he grew up with. So, but what they're all assuming is, right, that there are these two Havaras, competing Havaras, like you have different Nuschos of Tefillah. And a person should stick with his nusach. And therefore, if a person says davening in someone else's shul, you should, just like you would conform to their nusach, at least when you're davening for the amud. Davening privately, you keep your own nusach. But if you're davening for the amud, you should conform to their nusach. So the same should be true with regards to Havara also. So that's why they quote in the Halicha Shlomo, that Shlomo Zalman was officiating at a wedding of Sfaradim, he would speak Havara Sfaradi. That's what it says in the Halicha Shlomo. You make the brachas in Havara Sfaradi if you're davening for an amud. In a Sfaradi, you should really decline if you don't have the proper Havara. You'll sound silly. But if you know how to do it, if you're going to sound like a fool, don't do it. But if you know how to do it, then you should really daven. If you're davening in the Eshul, you should daven Havara Sephardit. Then we would hope again that the same courtesy would go in the other direction. So too, if a person is getting up to lane in a shul where they have a set Havara, they should really conform to the Havara of the shul. They call in the name of the Chazon Ish. If he lanes in a different Havara, you're not Yotze. I don't know if the Chazon Ish said that, but it's they're those who dispute that the Chazon Ish ever said it. Rav Pesach Frank has something along those lines. I think what they mean is you should really conform to the Havara of the shul. It's hard to say you're not Yotze. Why is it hard to say you're not Yotze? Because the Tzitz Eliezer already makes the point. He says, let's say I mispronounce a word when I'm laning, but it doesn't change the meaning. So the truth of the matter is, you don't really have to correct the Balkare. We do it because we love jumping on other people, and it's fun to do it. But really, you don't have to correct the Balkare if it doesn't change the meaning. The problem is, you have to be an Uber Chacham to know when it changes the meaning, when it doesn't change the meaning. But if it doesn't change the meaning, so then you don't really have to correct it. Says it's Tzitz Eliezer. Even if I pronounce it Havara Sfaradit, and this is Havara, Ashuas has the Havara of the Ashkenazim. But either way, I know what you mean. So even if it's a mistake, I know what you mean. So therefore, it's hard to say you're really not Yotze. So that's why if you have, a bar mitzvah bachar, he learned one havara, the shul is another havara, we can just like we wouldn't jump all over bar mitzvah bachar when he lanes, we could let the bar mitzvah bachar get through with the havara, that he learned. But really, in a shul, they should preserve the havara of the shul. Unless you have a shul, which is many of, I would suspect, every one of shuls where we dive in, where multiple havaras are acceptable, right? My shul on Yom Ne'erayim, we have Havara, we have Chassidim. And then, not everyone's thrilled about that, but we have Havara Chassidim. We have a few guys who pronounce Havara, Sephardit, a few. The main shul is Havara of Ashkenazim, so I would prefer that Balkari be Havara of Ashkenazim. That's really our tradition. But there are people in the shul who are, board members or, long-standing members, and they speak Havara of the Sephardim. So obviously our shul is a combination, and all can be... it can be acceptable. But really, ideally speaking, and that's what I advocate for, so there really should be one Havara, and that's the Havara of the minig of the shul. However, is it possible, okay, what we established is, that there's a proper, you know, way of pronouncing Hebrew in an incorrect way. You're supposed to pronounce it properly when you end in Kriya Shema. Presumably, we can, you know, extract from there to all of Tefillah. And certainly to serve as a Shliach Tzibur, you have to pronounce it properly. We have competing Havaris, Havar, you know, the Ashkenazim, Havar of the Sephardim, the Taimanim. We could even discuss the Chassidim, even though most assume that that was, you know, a later development. The Oi and the, you know, the confusing of, okay, the Havuda. So that's probably a later development. But you have these competing Havaris, and we said each one should stick with their Havar, even though there are, you know, advantages and disadvantages to each one. But is it possible that maybe, even though there is a correct way and an incorrect way, there are many Havaris? It never, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's only one correct way and they're competing. Maybe they really aren't in competition at all. Maybe there are multiple acceptable Havaris and there is no ultimately correct Havara and incorrect Havara. Within each Havara, there's correct way of pronouncing an incorrect way based on the convention of that Havara. But perhaps there isn't a correct one or more correct one and a less correct one. They are all equally acceptable. All we've seen so far is that there's a correct way of pronouncing it within each Havara. But perhaps each Havara is not, they're not competing at all. Each one is equally acceptable. So this is based, this kind of notion is already based on the Shulchan Aruch. Look back at the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, flip the page, Oisiyu Beis. Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Kapayim that a person who can't distinguish between the Aleph and the Ayin should not duchen. However, the Taz says that that's only if the rest of the people know how to distinguish between the Aleph and the Ayin, right? The Beis Chaifa, the people from Chaifa and the people from Beit Shan shouldn't duchen in a place where they do distinguish between the Aleph and the Ayin because it'll sound weird. But what about where everyone doesn't distinguish between the Aleph and the Ayin? So then the Taz claims that's permitted. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah has this in Hilchos Tefillah too. Eim Eman and Mishnah Karam the Aleph and Ayin, Ayin and Aleph. You shouldn't appoint someone down for the Amid if they don't distinguish between the Aleph and the Ayin. But then the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Radvaz that that's only where everyone else does. But if everyone doesn't distinguish, he says, the Radvaz makes their point, look over here, Oisiyu Dawud, Chelkaf Shimon Shin Sadi Dalin in the Radvaz. He says, well, what did they do in Haifa and Beit Shan? No one down for the Amid? Clearly they did, but it wasn't an aberration there. It wasn't something that stood out. Oh, so then over there it was acceptable. The Shaila is, can we appoint a guy from Beit Shan or from Haifa to daven by us? Will we do distinguish between an Aleph and an Ayin? Oh, that's what we said. So that's not right, because it sounds weird. It's going to distract people. But otherwise, it's, you know, it is acceptable. If that's the way everyone speaks, it's acceptable. But there's Yesh Lachkar. Why is that the case? Why is it that if everyone speaks this way, that all of a sudden it's permitted? Why? So you can explain it in one of two ways. The first way, which I think is more technical, is because we know what you mean. See, the problem with a person who doesn't speak properly is we just don't have any idea what he's talking about. He gets up there and he's mutilating the language, right? You know, he's butchering it. I don't know what's going on. So that's a bizarre into the tefillah. But if everyone knows what he means, because we all speak that way, we all butcher the tefillah. So then it's acceptable. Not the chachilah, but we don't have anything better. So that could be what it means. And the Sefer Chassidim makes this point, because look earlier, the Mishnah Berurah and Oisid Gimel said, of course, let's say a person has a speech impediment. He should not daven for the Amud. He shouldn't daven for the Amud. He says, person has a speech impediment. He should not daven for the Amud. It's not proper covet of tefillah. However, the Sefer Chassidim says, never think for a moment that Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't listen to his tefillahs. He doesn't hear his tefillahs. Kadosh Baruch Hu could understand his tefillahs. He compares it to a mother. Oy, what a powerful imagery. He says, a mother can understand what the little baby is talking about, even though the baby can't pronounce the words properly, because a mother knows. Rachmana liba boy. The mother sees what's in the heart of the child. She knows. She hears. So to Kadosh Baruch Hu hears our tefillahs, even though sometimes we don't pronounce the words properly. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what we're saying. So the Sefer Chassidim goes so far as to say there was once a person who was down for the Amud. This is already down for the Amud, which is a problem. And he was being noisy as kapov. Instead of saying Yivrech Hashem v'yishmerecha, he said Yivrech Hashem v'yishmedecha, which means that Kadosh Baruch Hu should destroy you and not him. So that's pretty bad. So they removed him. Sefer Chassidim says, oh, this was a terrible thing that they did. They shouldn't have removed him. Kadosh Baruch Hu understands what he means. So that's what the Rambam says over here too. I'll get to your point in 1 second, Zach. The Rambam says over here also, strange Rambam, or he says, the Rambam's talking about pronouncing the words properly. And then the Rambam says in the second line, "V'harav memana echa mitalmidav was paul lefanav b'tzibor," that the Rebbe could appoint one of his talmidim to daven b'tzibor. What? We're talking about, you got to pronounce the words properly. Oh, and by the way, a Rebbe could appoint this Talmud. What does that have to do with anything? So Or Sameach explains what it means is if the Rebbe understands the Talmud. Let's say if a guy has speech impediment in the shul, but we all understand him. We all interact with him. We know exactly what he's talking about. It's not strange anymore. Because this is the way he talks, and we understand it. So if we understand it, the Rebbe can appoint the Talmud to Daven even though he didn't speak properly. Where did he get that from? It's a huge Kiddush. So perhaps Or Sameach claims it's based in a Gemara Bar Metzia. If you remember, one of the people who couldn't speak properly was Reb Chiya. Reb Chiya couldn't distinguish between Ches and Hey. He pronounced every Ches as a Hey. I can have people say Hala. Right? Some people have a hard time. If you're not used to Semitic languages and the guttural sounds, you don't have a hard time with the Ches. Americans have a hard time with the Ches. It doesn't have, you don't have phonetically, you don't have it in the American language. So he had a, Reb Chiya was an Americaner. He had a hard time speaking Ches. So he said, Hey. So you shouldn't daven for the Yemen. So the Gemara says, that there was that the tefillahs of the Avos were so powerful, if Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were davening together, they could have brought about the Geula. That's the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, do we have anybody in our times whose tefillahs are so powerful? So the Gemara says, yes. Ika Rabbi Chiya Ubanov. If Rabbi Chiya and his sons were davening together, they could shake the world. So it says the Gemara says, one time, Gozer Rabbi Tainisei, Rabbi was Gozer Tainis, and they asked Reb Chiya and his children to daven for the Yomud. So Taisus asked, what are you talking about? How can Reb Chiya daven for the Yomud? He can't ask Gedai daven for the Yomud. Who does it? He can't ask Gedai daven for the Yomud. Who does it? He can't ask Gedai daven for the Yomud. He couldn't say the Ches. All he could say was the Hey. How is he able to daven for the Yomud? So Taisus says, we had no one else. However, the Rambam understood what this means is, they all understood Reb Chiya. They knew how he spoke. They were used to it. Oh, so be the Yevet. He could have it, right? Or even Lechachliwa now. We all understand him. So certainly HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands him. And certainly, therefore, the whole Tzibor is used to it. So there's no Bizayin. There's no lack of covet of Tzibor to have him even down for the Yemen. So is that what this means over here, getting back? Let's say everyone pronounces, no one is Mechalik between the Aleph and the Ayin. So now, even though I don't know how to be Mechalik between the Aleph and the Ayin, down for the Yomud. Why? Because no one is. So then fine. So is that because we all know what we mean? Or perhaps it's more fundamental? So Moshe writes in English, Moshe, perhaps already this is more fundamental. Perhaps what this is about is, if you have a community that develops its own Havara, over time it evolves, Moshe claims that is a valid Havara. Each one is Lashon HaKodesh. He says, even though one is only authentic, right? Moshe Rabbeinu spoke one way when he received the Torah. One is authentic. However, he claims they're all valid Havaras. Kulam Berulim, Kulam Mahuvim. They're all valid Havaras. So perhaps what the Radvaz means over here is that if the whole neighborhood speaks that way, that became a valid iteration, a valid form of Lashon HaKodesh. And now, not just we understand what you mean, even though you speak with a speech impediment. Nah, that might be true. But this is even more than that. What we're saying is there isn't, this is a one exclusive Havara. Rav Moshe claims one exclusively is true. But there isn't one Havara. There's multiple Havaras, which are all valid forms of Lashon HaKodesh. And that's what it means. If the whole town speaks this way, that's a valid form of Lashon HaKodesh. Yeah, what do you want to say?
So I was curious if this was similar. I mean, it seems like a little bit different when it comes to someone getting Aliyah. It's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch whether someone who can't read gets an Aliyah. So we end up asking the Rambam says, like, we don't embarrass him because it's like, oh, he's getting Aliyah. So when it comes to davening, it seems like even the speech impediment, we're trying to make these things like, oh, maybe we understand him, but in theory, shouldn't it be like, oh, we don't want to embarrass him? Like, why not say something?
Yeah,
like
you have to know the reality. But there was a guy who used to daven for the Amid, I remember, when I was growing up, had a lisp. He davened Yom Ne'erum, he had a beautiful voice. And the whole tzibur was Michael, whatever.
Is that his mocha? Because I mean, all the time, we have a Balin who just can't
reach. Yeah, so that's a problem. That's a problem. They butcher the davening. That's a problem. But then you have bigger sensitivities.
Right, so you allow it anyways, you know, similar to the Aliyah.
Sometimes. Depending on the shul and how nice they are.
Just not really that bad.
Yeah, sounds like it's not right.
Interesting.
So we'll call it the plague of the yard site. You know, it's a problem. If every Shabbos you have a yard site, then it's our uncle calls it the plague of the yard site. It's a problem. people butchering the davening every Shabbos. People, you know, people wait a whole Shabbos to have a nice geshmaka davening every Shabbos. Someone has a yard site. If you're in that kind of shul, a guy wants to daven everything and he doesn't know how to daven. It's a problem. That's more nusach ishu. Most people havara at least is okay. But, So Rabbi Yisrael claims you could have multiple havaras that are all considered to be lashon hakodesh, and perhaps that's what we're driving at over here. And they quote like that from Rabbi Henkin too. There's multiple havaras that are acceptable. But Rabbi Yisrael does say you should stick with your havara. You shouldn't switch there for, if there's so many that are true, why can't I switch havaras? Rabbi Yisrael says, no, because there's really one that's authentic. The nusach of the Ashkenazi havara for the Ashkenazim, they believe is authentic. The one of the Sfarim, they believe is authentic. But there's no reason to necessarily prefer one or the other because they're all acceptable forms of Lashon HaKodesh. So we honor one and the other. But Rabbi Yisrael claims since one is probably the authentic one, and there's competing views on that, each community should stick with their havara. Yeah.
So nowadays it's very common when people go to yeshiva for the year where they attach themselves to different types of customs, so they find those philosophies a little bit more interesting for them.
They find what? This,
what?
They find what?
They find like the philosophies of that type of nesa a little bit more interesting, and therefore they start talking specifically more like nesa svar.
Yeah.
So would that be considered fine or like?
Let's finish up, then we'll discuss at the end. Give me one more second. I would take it one step further than Ramosha, and we'll get to your point. I would take it one step further than Ramosha. Ramosha comes as one true one. I don't believe any of these are true. If you speak to a linguist, just look at our own experience, right? In the South, we all came here with colonies, right? All the Americans came here, the English speakers came here in colonies, started in 13 colonies. Presumably they all spoke the same dialect of English when they came, British. No one speaks anymore with a British accent. What happened? In the South, they say y'all, and they speak whatever, you know, with a drawl. In the Northeast, they speak one way. And even the British colonies, Australia speaks English one way, South Africa one way, New Zealand another way. What's going on? The answer is language is constantly evolving. The way we pronounce things is constantly evolving. I think the Smithsonian has an archive of different pronunciations from different decades because even within our lifetime, things are evolving. New Jersey is a different dialect than New York, and even 100 years ago, they spoke differently in New York than we speak today. So things are constantly evolving. Now, there are lots of influences to that, right? We already know in the times of the Shvatim, the Shevet of Ephraim couldn't say the Shin. They could only say Siboles. They couldn't say Shiboles. And the Radak claims it's because they were from the southern Israel, and the weather affected them, right? And they, like I believe in the South, they speak slower because you know things are slower when the weather is nice. You don't mind moving slower. Here in the Northeast, we got to get out of the cold, so we speak much faster. It must have something to do with it. But you know, every lifestyle affects the way that you speak, and certainly the vernacular affects the way that you speak. The oi in Hebrew clearly came from like a Yiddish influence, and the other influences of the language of the vernacular that they were used to speaking. Those were the sounds that we're used to hearing, and that crept into other forms as well. So that's part of the natural evolution of language. I don't believe that there is any dialect, Havara, that is the same dialect that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke thousands of years ago. It's just not possible. We see within decades, within centuries, certainly the Havara changes drastically. So it's not logical to say that anyone has been preserved. So what I believe, or I would have taken Moshe one step further, and I recently came across Rav Asher Weiss already says that he doesn't say it as extreme as I said it, but he claims Rav Moshe himself is having it both ways. Rav Moshe says all are valid, but there's one real one. Ah. He says, no, they're all equally valid and there is a one real one. None of them are real. The answer is, when I say none of them are real, it doesn't mean they're all phony. They're all valid evolutions of language, which is constantly evolving. What is a violation of that is within each convention, there's a way that you speak. In New York, there's a way that we speak. There's things that are just wrong, right? So if you use bad grammar and bad pronunciation, it's wrong. It's not a proper, you know, vowel within the convention that has evolved. So that's Karvago Dictic B.O.C.O.S.A. Each community has evolved in a different way, and you're supposed to conform to that convention of that community. So that's why nowadays, when no one is being Mechal between Aleph and Ayin, I don't think it makes any sense to go back and try and revive a distinction between the Aleph and the Ayin. As long as it evolved Naturally, no one was doing it with their finger on the scale because of political agendas, which did happen right in our times. Unless you'll say political agendas is part of the fabric and the history of the Jewish people. We've always had political agendas, and that's sometimes why things evolve. Okay, depends how you want to view it. But either way, as long as you're not tipping the scale, you know, making a change for some reason deliberately, it's a natural evolution of language. There is no benefit anymore to going back to being machal between the ayin and the aleph. It doesn't make any sense because language has evolved so much. There's no way you're solving the problem of getting back to the Avraham Moshe Rabbeinu by doing that. And I don't even know if we would want to do it that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended for language to evolve. Just as a Moshe Lamal Davidoyme, as you have over here, the Chazon Ish makes the point, surprisingly, coming from the Chazon Ish, that why are Shiurim given in Beitzim, Kezeisim, and Etzbos? Strange way to give a Shiur. So Chazon Ish says, based on Tshuvas HaGa'enim, that it was given in this fashion because they were always readily available in every society. The Torah was given to every society and knew that things would change over time. And the Shiur of Kezias changes over time. The only reason the Chazon Ish doubled the Shiurim because he wasn't sure if we should measure the Kezias of Matzah based on olives or based on etzbos, which are much bigger, because the Gemara makes a comparison between the two. This many etzbos equals this many kezesim. Which one is the shear that we're supposed to measure matzah in? Etzbos or kezesim? And that's where the shear of the Chazon Ish came from. But the Chazon Ish says if the shear would be based on kezias, be based on a beitzah, it changes in every generation, and it's meant to be like that. The Torah is meant to evolve in the different societies in which it applies to. So too, it makes no sense to say language has one correct way and one incorrect way. What it means is, as long as it evolved naturally within that community, that's correct. But that being said, Rav Asher Weiss makes the point, you should stick with the minhag of your community, right? No different than any. We always stick with the minhag of Avosenu Biyadeinu, even though that one is not less correct, or ours is more correct. Every person should stick with his Mesira in all aspects of Yiddishkeit, and this being no different. But in fact, they are all valid, and there isn't, as Rav Asher says, one authentic and one faker. No, they're all equally, as long as it evolved naturally, authentic. And therefore, there's no reason to go back with the olives and the ayins. It's no better anymore. It evolved naturally, that's fine. And so too the ay and the chsidish havura, as long as it evolved naturally, it's just as valid as any other havar. What about people who want to switch within communities? I think hodgepodges are always bad. To be a hodgepodge of a havara, like a guy who says, Toira. Doesn't sound right, you know. You got a guy who has Havara Svaradit, but he says, Oi, Toiroteka. It doesn't sound right. that's a hodgepodge in general, is always bad in Yiddishkeit. You got to be within one community, one convention, you got to have your makom, you got to have a location. So if someone, let's say, is seeping over to another community because he sees himself as migrating to that community for other things too, so then, yeah, I don't have as much of a problem with it. But if a person is just seeping over, but he really belongs in this community, but he's now going to, you know, talk Havara Sfardit with the Oi, to me that's just a hodgepodge in Yiddish. I don't think that is that's ever a good thing. But a person really should stick with the minhag of Avosav. I don't think we should tip it in Havara Sfardit direction either. If people are coming from Ashkenazi communities, we should teach them in Havara Ashkenazis. Of course, spoken language in Hebrew is in Israel is Havara Sfardit. You have to be cognizant of that. But at least when it comes to Tefillah, we should stick with our Havara.